When I saw the Falcon side boosters from the latest Elon Musk spectacular Falcon heavy lift take his electric car up into space, and I saw them choreograph, stop their fall and not just tumble through space, but guide themselves down and actually touch down. I saw them touch down in synchronicity, beautiful, like two dancers, these two large rocket engines, which were sent up into space, or sent up into the upper atmosphere, come down and just make perfect landings. I knew I had seen a piece of space history, and it really got my mind thinking. So this is a science podcast by Peter Hill. It's Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I get on to science moments where you think you've seen something special. There's obviously the iconic picture of the Saturn V rocket being launched by the United States in the 1968, around there. And it's a beautiful high-resolution film. The camera's running as the rocket slowly goes up past it. You see the start, and it just... it's a beautiful pan, and you see that USA, and then these huge, powerful rocket engines, and you think, my God, and then you look at it, and you realize it's thousands of tons of thrust going up, because it weighs a lot of stuff, and it's a tower taller than the Statue of Liberty, just being pushed up into space, this amazing thing, the Saturn V rocket. So when you saw that, you say, well, that is definitely something. And the first rockets, sort of serious rockets, were the V2 of World War II, which were just barely 30 years or 40, just a very short time before it. So the Germans had a V2, and they sort of souped up this V2, and it went into space. Pretty amazing thing to see. It's something to really think about. And the two characters that I want to sort of compare and contrast is Elon Musk. Everyone knows the beautiful way he presents stuff. He sort of thinks a bit, and he just pauses, trying to get out the words. It's a very personal... I myself would, I think he's performing a great service, being able to put a figurehead on this large bodies of ideas, where I myself intellectually would never take credit for someone else's idea or another group's work, or pretend something was mine. But I think he's doing a valuable thing in the United States. The United States tends to really need a figurehead. They have CEOs of their organizations who act as a mouthpiece, and their organizations can be doing heaps of other things, not necessarily the most ethical things, and it can be a very large organization, but we sort of can't comprehend that. We sort of look at the few famous figureheads. So he's a figurehead, very interesting fellow. I wouldn't be able to. I'm just not ambitious in that sort of way. I'm sitting here, and there's these huge bats flying around. This is in Australia, giving you a talk here. But the person who I really want to talk about is Tsvosky. And I'm not pronouncing him correctly, and I really apologize to any Russian listeners. Look, your language is very hard for us Australians to pronounce. So he's Konstantin Tsvosky. My son, who's really into speaking Russian fluently, he's sort of despaired as I try to learn how to pronounce that name. So he's sort of a really interesting character, sort of a contrast to Elon Musk. Born 1853, really early, and died 1935, so sort of quintessential Russian, born really in the center of Russia, sort of ideal Russian, center of Russia, and You can see, this is Tsarist Russia, you can see that a real, sort of similar to Australia, isolated scientists having ideas and trying to publish into a space. So there's sort of a lot of similarities between Tsarist Russia and Australia, I can see. And he really just was ahead of his time. Now, typically ahead of his time, isolated, his sort of first exploit was figuring out gas laws, gas physics, and he published this, tried to publish it in the Russian Academy, and they said, look, you're 13 years out of date. This stuff has already been covered. Everyone understands that. And so unabashed, he sort of changed his track a bit. Sort of understanding gas laws was pretty important, because that gives you the gas laws coming out of a rocket and the lack of gas, the effects of vacuum. He sort of really understood that way ahead of his time. And he began to design, this is before the Wright brothers, aerodynamic airships. This is before the big dirigible airships. He began to design it and publish it. And this is where I think it's very similar to Australia. Australia's got a very very meagre commercialisation record and a huge publication record. So Australian scientists, we're sort of a few more scientists per head of population than I think America, way less than Finland. And we just publish because there's nothing else to do out here. There's no industry, no funding. We just publish away. So we've got a fairly high publication rate for our country. But similar to Russia, there he published designs, built a wind tunnel in his apartment, supposedly, and did basic things and got the basics of rockets, and was the first to publish the rocket equation, which basically says the lighter the mass of your final rocket, the more rocket fuel you can carry, and the more high velocity your rocket fuel is, the higher your rocket will go, basically. It's a fairly interesting formula when you write it down to work out what's happening there. And based on that, he worked out that you need multi-stages. And so this is the important thing, is that your rocket is basically a rocket which lifts a rocket platform up, which then fires a rocket, and then that rocket has a rocket platform and fires more and more as you go up. And he worked out that your highest velocity of rocket fuel, your highest speed rocket fuel, will become from hydrogen and oxygen, because that's the greatest heat and energy, particle velocity. So they're very light particles, and so when they get hot, they travel out faster. He basically did a complete wrap-up of all early rocket science by way before other people got involved, publishing everything. And he went back into school teaching, because he couldn't make any money. I sort of understand that 100%, getting back into school teaching, and then got really taken away with the Bolshevik revolution. He believed in looking after the poor, so did the communists at that point in time. So he was in the right place at the right time, and went back and published a lot of things in the Russian Academy. Very, very interesting person, and to me, a real contrast with Elon Musk. So he himself is coming up with a lot of the ideas, but doesn't have the way to market it. Whereas Elon Musk, it's like what he's doing is so incredible. I don't like him or dislike him or make any judgment of him, but if you actually look at the artfulness of this last Falcon thing, where you have basic items in everyone's everyday life, their culture, and he's actually bundled that onto his rocket. So this is the electric space car, this Tesla space car, with a a mannequin in it. So it's a car, a mannequin in space that's playing David Bowie, which may or may not be actually happening. Obviously, to know, maybe you can play it loud as it likes, but there's no actually air up there. No one actually ever thinks of that one. And so he has all the icons up. So it's enough to make you look, and I decided to look. But it's then when I saw the actual rockets come out and land. So basically with three identical rockets, Falcon rockets with nine engines each, so 27 each. So fair number of engines here fired off, and beautiful computer control. So you have your classic rockets goes up, the two side boosters on either side come off. Now, when these come off, they continue to fly and then start to fall, break their fall, and then under guidance actually fly all the way back into a landing pad, and you can see them. It's the most amazing thing. You see these rockets completely counterintuitively fall out of the sky and land, and this is intellectually sort of almost overpowering for me, because I really obviously never thought I would live to see the day. One of the things when I introduced drone flights at school, because before this we got too much for everyone, the drone would be GPS, and so if the kid just lost it, he could put down the remote control and the drone would just fly back and land itself. So this GPS landing, this control, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And so I suppose the important thing is that the Saturn cost billions of dollars each Saturn V rocket, which took the astronauts to the moon, billions of dollars each. This rocket that Elon Musk is sending up, or SpaceX, is just a mere $90 million. And so it got me really looking, and I having done a bit of rocket science, strangely, I have done the physics, the gas coming out of a rocket, looking at gas coming out of a hole into a vacuum chamber. It's exactly the same thing. It's sort of the chamber, it creates a sort of virtual expansion chamber. You've got your burning chamber, your cone, and that cone creates a chamber where the gas is travelling faster than the speed of sound. Gas is going faster than the speed of sound, so it's creating a shockwave. So it creates a little bell of high pressure. So this is actually, it's actually been pushed, if you like an air cannon pushed up, and it forms a plate, a shockwave plate, where the air builds up and it slows down. There's a sudden build up, and then it fans out again. I've forgotten the name of all those things. I studied all the physics of it. And so looking at the footage, you see some sort of remarkable things. So if you actually look at the SpaceX stuff, you see a fairly complex structure of shockwaves coming out of the back of the rocket. So you've got your classic flames coming out of the rocket, and then these group of chambers, air chambers, create another super chamber, and so there's a second flare of fuel going down. It's sort of a two-stage rocket blast off. So if you have a look at it, there's two levels of flame involved in it. Now the flame used is liquid oxygen, LOX, liquid oxygen, and kerosene. Now it's sort of interesting to think about kerosene. There's a special rocket-grade kerosene, highly pure kerosene, or it's got additives which stops it coking up or forming carbon dimers, and basically a pyrolytic carbon on the inside of your rocket engine, which will eventually stop it. So at very high temperatures, you have a lot of back reactions happening. And so you've got to nail these back reactions. Now, the poor old Soviets who were trying to build a competition to the Saturn V built, I think it was called the N1, had 30 engines. So the Falcon X heavy lifter has got 27, 3 times 9. And these had, the Russian one had, back in the day had 30 engines, fantastic looking rocket. And of course you've got these things that the Russians didn't have access to, rocket grade kerosene for this particular aspect, and they also didn't have the computers that we have nowadays. So what happened is, I think they built 4 N1s, and they used to fly a certain height and then just do an spectacular explosion. They had a lot of force involved in them, a lot of energy. These were huge, huge rockets. I think the largest rockets ever conceived or built. And these blew up. And then one obviously blew up on the launch pad, killing a lot of people. One of the largest explosions, the largest non-nuclear explosion ever in history, was one of these rockets blowing up in the space. And courtesy of the Cold War, none of this got out for many, many years, 10 years, 20 years after it all happened. So it's interesting that they're using the liquid fuel technology. So I think with hydrogen, when you're loading in hydrogen, you just can't leave the hydrogen there. You've basically got to have a fairly large empty tank. Hydrogen is not particularly heavy, but it is apparently quite bulky. And it takes a bit of art to involve, and so you've got to have a lot of infrastructure there, so the kerosene and oxygen. Now the other fuel used besides kerosene is asymmetric dihazide. It's basically carbon with a few nitrogen. It's almost like nitroglycerin, almost. So it's a real rock fuel, but a stable fuel. So it doesn't go off like nitroglycerin, but when it does burn, it gets really hot. So this is another rocket fuel. Unfortunately, it's very toxic. So kerosene smells a lot. It's basically jet fuel. And oxygen, obviously, it's not toxic. So there is this OH&S issue of making these other rocket fuels. But the essential thing is the cheapness and the ability to put all these things together. The ability for the rockets to actually re-land themselves and reuse themselves is just blows your entire mind. When you actually count about it, it's actually 27 plus one of these rockets in the second stage to propel this up in space. So I think the SpaceX one, I may be wrong, I think it's a two-stage to launch this into orbit. Hats off to that. The other really interesting thing is to actually look at the footage of the engines themselves. And if you look at space shuttle engines and the other engines, they're quite complicated because there's this cooling liquid around the outside. So the cones are cooled, and the liquid, the rocket fuel goes through and heats, it gets preheated up. For some reason, the SpaceX ones don't do this. They use almost a refractory cone. So one wonders how it is, and it glows red hot. And so if it glows red hot, it's around 700 degrees, so it's radiating out heat. These cones, obviously, I wonder how long that lasts for, but they've got so many minutes of burn, and they may be thrown out afterwards. One of the things is that if you heat something up and cycle it, you don't do, but I suppose the overall rocket is there. But when you're looking at it, you see this is distinctly a different type of rocket here, where you look at the cones of other rockets that don't glow red hot. This is the expansion cone on the end of the rocket, and one of the things is that massively increases the lift because it connects it to that shock wave afterwards, where the gas travels faster than the speed of sound and forms this bell shaped thing, and then a cone out of that. So that is very interesting. So that increases enormously the amount of impulse power. So it's not just simply the velocity of the fuel. You can actually get more lift by these cones. So it's very interesting to see the cones. So in summary, if I had to say, Elon Musk is basically putting out space, but he's also harvested our culture and actually gone in, got a car, gone in, got a spaceman, got some music, put it all together, put it in a rocket, and then made sure there's no one else but him on central stage to explain what's going on. So you see none of his people. And so really we've entered a new phase of science where we've... So it's that to say, just to go back onto it, the shock cones, the way the shock's there, the actual expansion cones being refractory material, and the fact that these guys can actually, rather than fall out of the sky, there's huge bats here. There's a huge bat right next to me. It's up there eating the fruit. And the fact that these can come down, it's just really amazing. We are entering a new area of science. But on the bigger thing, you've got these small scientists, isolated scientists, doing a lot of things. Then you've got the big scientists, big groups, corporations coming together, nations, a big industry, money, you know, hugely complex thing. Yet we have gone back to the idea of an individual scientist, this individual person which we can focus on. So if we want a lens to look at what's going on, this person, and let's say it is a gift, you know, someone who's able to promote themselves and go forward, it is a lens that we can see through it. It's just, it's a little bit complex in terms of it's a twist in history, which is going to be hard to put on into the textbook. So we have these quintessential lone scientists who struggle and put things together, as we want our scientists, our students to do. And they live a life, they struggle, they study, they produce things, they produce everything that we want them to do. And then we get big science, and so it's really hard to actually describe to students what's going on. But then we have Elon Musk, and we really can't say chapter, you know, this space pioneers, Von Braun, Goddard's another very interesting, I'll just cover that really quickly. I've just saw in the museum his original hoop rocket. So he has his rocket at the top of his nose cone, and it jets down and through a hole. His fuel tanks are on the side, and so it's like a pendulum. It's stabilized to go up. But you've got these scientists, and they've got a story, and they work, and they eventually get a large organization, maybe some of the time, and they really work in their fields. You really can't, as the next chapter, perhaps you could put Elon Musk, we need a new super story of science to describe what's going on. So that's my thoughts. I hope you're interested in it. So that's a little podcast on, I'll try and pronounce that for you Russians again, Tsvosky. I'm sorry. Konstantin Tsvosky, really famous guy. You should be proud of him. He's really did heaps of space pioneering. No one's really heard of him. And then you've got at the other end, with audio visual, so with visuals, spectacular robotics. It's a whole lot of cultural capital being choreographed into this launch. You've got Elon Musk at the other side. And it's not to judge, it's just to contemplate. So that's all for now. In the meantime, keep on doing science.